It is April the 29th, and we are in Yechezkel. We are in Perek Lamed Beis, chapter 32. We're in the middle of the Perek. We are up to Pasuk Yud Zayin 17. And as we mentioned last week, the balance of this Perek, which is not that many Pesukim, we'll be dealing with a concept that is something that most of us don't like to think about, and we don't really know that much about, which is Gehenna. That is what the rest of this parak is going to talk about. So before we begin, let's just have a general discussion about what we really don't know. Okay. So in order to understand that, we have to review some things that we spoke about a long time ago, both in this class and in the Sunday night class. And that is what happens after a person dies, and what is the sequence of events and how things work themselves out in the history of the world. Many of these things we don't know for certain. And as I've mentioned to you in the past, I've mentioned to a lot of people in the past, that the Rambam writes very strongly that it is a waste of time to speculate on things that we just don't know much about, like what's going to happen after Mashiach comes. Things of that nature, they're fun to talk about. Everybody loves to talk about these things. But at the end of the day, we're all really just guessing. And we'll find out, Mirz Hashem. And when it happens, we'll know. And there's not much gained by that speculation, because it doesn't change how we act today. Whether when Mashiach comes, the whole world is going to be completely different, or whether it's going to be only slightly different, and whether there's going to be a lot of nisim that happen or not, and when will exactly Tchias HaMesim happen, when will the resurrection of the dead happen, and who's going to come alive when. All these things are interesting, and we have to believe in them, but to discuss all the details that we're just guessing about anyway doesn't really change how we act today. We still have to keep the Torah, do mitzvos, improve ourselves, don't do averos, get along with each other, etc. So it doesn't really change. But it is important to know the fact that we do know. That is important. And whatever we do know for certain, it is important that we are aware of. Now, we've discussed in the past that when the world was originally created, the goal was that Adam and Chava would not sin, and because they would not sin, they would reach perfection. They were created imperfect, just as we are created imperfect. They were created imperfect, although they were on a much higher level of perfection than we are today, because there had never been a sin. So their level of perfection, we would look at them and think they were perfect. That's how almost perfect they were, but they weren't quite perfect. They were a little imperfect. And they had to work on themselves to perfect themselves. And the way that they're working on themselves manifested itself was to keep the one mitzvah of not eating from the tree. Whatever that means, however we're to understand that, it doesn't seem like a big deal to us. We're not there. Obviously, it was a big deal because they were not able to handle the temptation. But that was their goal. Had they perfected themselves, had they been able to restrain themselves until Shabbos, which was their time of trial, was from the moment they were created until Shabbos, which, as far as the Torah seems to describe it, was only a few hours, but of course we don't know what time was in those days. Had they restrained themselves until Shabbos, that would have been perfection, and they would have entered the time called the time of reward. Shabbos is the time of reward. That would have been the time of the reward for their hard work of having perfected themselves. In that model, there is no death. There's no such thing as death. There's life that goes from the period of time of imperfection where man works on himself to perfect himself, and then seamlessly moves into the time of reward that follows man's having perfected himself. But after Adam and Chava sinned, and they ate from the tree, so the entire system changed. We're not going to discuss this evening why it had to change. We've discussed this in the past, why it had to happen. But we know that one of the consequences, or perhaps the most significant consequence of their sin, was that the system changed. And now, the period of time that is the period that you work on yourself, and the period of time where you get the reward for having worked on yourself, cannot go seamlessly one to the other. Those two periods of time have to be broken up by this temporary state called death. That's what death is. So death is a very sad thing. It's upsetting. But really, in the grand scheme of things, death is a temporary stop on the way to that secondary time frame. There's really two time frames. There's the here and now, where we work on ourselves. There's the other one, which is where we get rewarded for our work. And now death comes in between those two. And it's not seamless anymore. And what happens is that when a person dies, the neshama and the guf, the soul and the body, are separated from each other for this temporary time called death. And then with Tchiyas HaMeisim, with the resurrection of the dead, the soul and body are reunited for that time of reward, the time of what we call Olam Haba, the time of the future. That's what is the system now. Had Adam and Chava not sinned, there would have been no need for the body and soul to separate from each other and then come back together. They would have remained together the entire time. Okay. So that is what happens when a person dies. And in the future, the body and soul will be brought back together with Tchiyas HaMeisim. So now, we have a few questions here. One question is, what happens to the body and what happens to the soul during this period of time called death? It's a temporary state, but what happens to the body, what happens to the soul? That's one area we have to discuss. And the other nagging question, the one that is disconcerting, is what about those who don't deserve resurrection? What happens to them? And that's not a fun question to think about. So what happens then? So the first one is a lot easier to answer. What happens to the body and the soul during this time called death? Well, the body, you know what happens to the body. The body gets put in the ground. The body decomposes. And when it's time for resurrection, then the body will reconstitute itself. And that's what happens. There are great tzaddikim, we know, that the body does not decompose. It remains in its full and complete state and does not have to decompose. So even though even the great tzaddikim have to go through this state where the body and soul get pulled apart, but the body does not need to decompose. Where for most people the body does need to decompose, that's part of the purification process, where then it gets reconstituted for Olam Haba, for that future time, the time of reward. What happens to the soul? So, in an ideal case, the soul gets removed from the body and goes to a place called Gan Eden. Now that place called Gan Eden is not the same Gan Eden that Adam and Chava were in. Because Adam and Chava were in a Gan Eden that is somewhere in this world. We don't know where it is. It's been blocked off, as we know from the Psukim in Bereishis. They say explicitly that Hashem does not want anybody going in there. No one will ever be able to get in there. It's been blocked off. Doesn't matter what kind of scientific advances we'll make. Gan Eden will never be discovered. Yeah?
I read someone there's a Gan Eden of the upper and the lower.
Mm-hmm. That's correct. So this place where the souls go is a spiritual Gan Eden, which corresponds to the Gan Eden here on earth. Just like there is a Yerushalayim Shalmala, there's a Jerusalem that's upstairs as well as down here, and there's a Beis HaMikdash Shalmala, there's a Beis HaMikdash upstairs as well as down here, there's a Gan Eden upstairs as well as down here. And that Gan Eden is where the souls go, and they, so to speak, hang out there until it's time for Tzchias HaMeisim, for resurrection. Yes?
So, where the Jewish people are supposed to be from the 600,000 men and all the people that we all were at Sinai, where those of us that are here are supposed to be resurrected souls?
You want to know if we are Gilgulim? If we are...
No. What I want to know is How does the body know what body to go to?
Yeah, I have no idea. I don't know.
Are we resurrected?
You don't mean resurrected. Is that the resurrected?
I mean,
you mean
recycled.
Reincarnated.
Reincarnated souls. Many Svarim say that we are all reincarnated souls, right. But I don't understand that concept at all.
Well,
and as far as I'm concerned, it's all right. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm not worried about it. Hashem will figure it out.
Right? Sure.
I don't know what I was in the past. Okay. We can make jokes about it. Okay, so that's what that there is a place called Gan Eden, and that's where the souls go. Now, what is this Gan Eden? This Gan Eden, the spiritual Gan Eden, is a really nice place to be. It's a place where the souls enjoy a certain degree of reward, not the ultimate reward, which we will get, which can only be given. The ultimate reward can only be given to a complete person. A complete person is body and soul, not soul by itself. So those who have departed and their souls are upstairs, they are not yet receiving the ultimate reward. Because, as the Gemara says, they earned the reward as a complete person, body and soul together. It would be unfair to reward only the soul and not the body. That doesn't make sense. And therefore, the ultimate reward is not yet. No one's gotten their ultimate reward yet. That will be in the time of Olam Haba, of Tchias HaMeis, and that's the same thing. Resurrection of the dead, the next world, that's the same thing, Olam Haba. That hasn't happened yet. Whenever that happens, it happens. So that's when the ultimate reward comes. But right now, the souls are enjoying, as the Ramchal, Rav Moshe Chaim Letzatzel writes, in Derech Hashem, the way of God, they are enjoying a me'ein. They're enjoying a taste of what that future reward will be. Now, what is this reward? It's something which we don't understand, but we do know for a fact, because Chazal tell us, that this reward is the most pleasurable experience that is possible to have, and it's a pleasure which is impossible to experience in this world, as we are right now. And imagine the most pleasurable experience a person can have in this world, whether it's a physical pleasure, or an emotional pleasure, or a psychological pleasure, whatever that pleasure you can think of in this world, it pales in comparison to this ultimate, incredible pleasure that the next world is. And that pleasure is the pleasure of being close to Hashem.
So you're talking now about the Olam Haba.
Olam Haba. That's right. Right. And the pleasure is, the Hana is, being close to Hashem. It doesn't sound like much. Being close to Hashem, a real good piece of lemon meringue pie sounds better than that. But we know, of course, that being close to Hashem is the ultimate pleasure, right? We just don't, since we can't experience it, we have no idea what that is. But we know that it is the greatest pleasure possible. Where the souls are now, those who have departed, they're enjoying a taste of what that is. In other words, they are closer to Hashem where they are than where we are. The person who has departed and their soul has gone to Gan Eden, they are now closer to Hashem than we are now. So they are experiencing more of that pleasure than we experience. But not the amount of pleasure that they will get when they're reunited with their body and then really get close to Hashem. That's the ultimate pleasure. And that hasn't happened to anybody yet. That's in the future. So that's the system in the best case scenario. There's a separation of body and soul. Body goes into the ground. In the best case scenario, body doesn't even decompose. Soul goes up to Gan Eden and gets close to Hashem on a certain level and waits. And eventually, body and soul come back together and get that ultimate reward. Yeah?
I have two comments. In this spiritual Gan Eden, aren't there also other levels of getting close to Hashem? Because when we learn Torah and do mitzvahs and they have the someone doing a Rina Shama for them,
Doesn't
this help them to move?
There are levels in every one of these stages. There are levels. In this world, there are levels. In the holding level, which is Gan Eden, there are levels. Mm-hmm. And in the next world, there are levels. There's levels everywhere.
Okay.
There's levels everywhere, and there's improvement. There's where we want to get more. We always want to have more. And it's not nothing is stagnant. It's always moving along. But we only have the power to improve ourselves in this world. Or to improve those who have already passed away, we can improve them by doing things in this world. That's correct.
And the other question I had is, also read somewhere that it's talking about in Olam Haba. They talk about a great feast of the Yasan, the Tzaddikim, and the circle special dance, and it's a tremendous light.
Don't understand a word of it.
Okay.
But you're right.
But you did a whole shiur on
it. It was all conceptual. I don't understand it. Right? But you're right. There are these things, all these concepts, and they all have to do with Olam Haba, but I don't understand what it really is. And we can't. We don't know because we can't experience it.
Hasn't the Rambam written something a little bit about
it? A little bit. He himself says, don't get too into it. Don't get involved in it so much. Just, accept it. Okay. Now, all of that is the best case scenario. But we know that there is also a place called Gehenna. And what is Gehenna? So, Gehenna is a spiritual place. It's not where the body goes. It has to do with the soul. And it is a place that is not a fun place. Now, we don't know what goes on there. We do know that our concept of Gehenna has nothing to do with the Christian concept of purgatory. That is clear. We do not believe in a devil, and we don't believe in being cooked and whatever they, they have. We do know that there is fire associated with Gehenna, but we know it's not a physical fire because it's not a physical place. It's a spiritual place that deals with the souls. So when Chazal used the term fire, they don't mean a physical or literal fire. They're trying to use a term that will help us understand what's going on. And since we can't understand spiritual places, because we're not spiritual beings, we have a spiritual part of us, but we live in a physical world. And therefore, our experience doesn't allow us to understand spiritual things. So we can learn the first parak of Yechezkel, and we'll talk about angels, and talk about wings and arms and legs and a chariot with wheels and all, and we have no idea what's going on. But it's trying to say it in a way that we can possibly have some small idea. So similarly with Gehenna, whatever descriptions there are in Chazal, it's only trying to give us some kind of way of latching onto what it is, but we really don't know. We do know that there is pain of some sort. It's not a physical pain. And we also know. So we know that there's something painful about it. And we also know that it is a place of purification, and that's where fire comes in. See, fire we know is painful. If you put your finger in a fire, you'll burn your finger. It'll hurt. We also know that fire purifies. When you kasher an oven, you light the fire. That kashers the oven. We know that fire purifies something. And so there is a, or you don't have to go with kashering, use the example of purifying gold or any other kind of metal. So you use fire to
burning anything.
What's that?
It's nothing. It's a spiritual place where it's burning.
Right. So there can't be anything burning. But we know that just as fire hurts and just as fire purifies, Gehenna does the same thing. How does it happen? What does that mean with the soul? We have no idea. But we do know that there is something painful about it, and we do know there is purification going on. And so, if a person passes away, and God forbid, they still need some level of purification. And remember that Hashem's interest is to reward us as much as possible. He wants to give us as much reward as possible. What Hashem could do is, he could say, well, a person has 1,000 mitzvah points, and he has 200 avera points, so let's have 200 cancel out 200. That way there'll be no need for any purification. And give him 800 mitzvah points. That's what Hashem could do. That's what he could do. Now, you'll laugh about it, right? But he could do that. He could have the mitzvahs cancel out the averos. There'd be no need for a Gehenna. And that way, he gets 800 mitzvah points, and that's what he'll get rewarded. But Hashem doesn't want to do that, because then he won't get his 1,000 points. And Hashem wants to give a person the full 1,000 points. If a person earned 1,000, he wants to give him 1,000. But he has 200 negatives. He has 200 averos. Then he'll purify him in order to be able to give him the 1,000. That's the way Hashem works. That's a chesed. That's the kindness Hashem does. He doesn't want to shirk any of the reward. And so Gehenim does that. Gehenim will take a soul that, for whatever reason, still has some demerits, and will purify those demerits. When a person says Kaddish, so we know that we say Kaddish for only 11 months, not for an entire year, because we say that only a real Rasha, only someone who's truly evil, would be in Gehenim for an entire year, and we are sure that our relatives are not real Rishayim, they're not evil like that, and even if they needed the purification of Gehenim for some period of time, it's certainly not a year, so Kaddish is only set for 11 months. But if there is Gehenim, in this sort of circumstance, where it's a purification place, it goes on for a year or less. That's the time. And when we say painful, it doesn't mean that, you see, it can be a scary thing. A person thinks of the relative sitting and screaming all day long. That's not what it is. It's not a physical pain. But we don't know what kind of... We know that it is painful. It may be simply the pain of not being allowed in to Gan Eden. That may be very painful for a soul. For a soul not to be able to get in for a certain amount of time. That may be very painful. That may be painful. It may be the pain of the soul revisiting all the sins that it did during its lifetime, now that it realizes the truth. And so to speak, what we human beings would say, feeling terrible over what it did. Right? It may be that kind of pain. There are other kinds of pains that are not physical pains that we can relate to. And even though whatever the pain is, it's going to be different than anything we can articulate, because it's a spiritual thing, but we can be sure that pain is something other than physical. We just don't know what it is. But it is painful. And it is painful enough that Chazal tell us that a person would prefer to endure physical pain in this world than to endure that spiritual pain in the next, it's not the next world, but in Gehenna. A person would prefer physical pain here than there. Nobody wants to think about pain. Nobody likes pain. We know people who will go through pain, who have gone through pain, and it scares us. No one wants to have pain. It's a terrible thing to think about. But Chazal tell us, if we could look at it objectively, which we can't, because we're physical beings, if we could look at it objectively, we would choose even intense physical pain over Gehenna. We would choose it if we were able to make that choice, and if we really could look at it objectively. Of course, we prefer not to have any pain, which would be through doing teshuva, etc. When a person, God forbid, goes through difficult times at the end of their life before they die, so we know that the purpose of that is to purify the person before they die so they will not have to endure Gehenna. And that is really what is happening, even though, of course, we daven, anytime a person is sick, we don't want them to endure pain, we don't want them to go through difficult times, we don't want a person to be sick. But that's ultimately what's happening. And we still have to daven for the person, because we can daven that they not have pain, and that would also save them from the pain. But at the same time, that's ultimately what's happening when a person does go through difficulty at the end of their life. Yeah?
So you're saying that sometimes you feel death, a lot of people are very sick and very much in pain, they're going through a purification process.
That's so correct.
They don't have to go through anything?
They don't go through a Gehenna.
Gehenna.
Right. Either that, or at least the Gehenna is minimized. Uh-huh. Right. That's what's happening over there.
So, righteous people, Rabbi and whatever, who have very hard ends of life,
right,
are they held to more stringent?
They're certainly held more stringent. You're getting into another question, which is that, let's say the person doesn't have anything to be purified for, why would they go through pain and suffering?
What do you mean not purified for?
Well, let's say they have nothing, they've done nothing wrong.
Oh, okay.
Or they've not done nothing that would be commensurate to the type of pain that they're having. Uh-huh. Right? So that's a whole different question, which we have touched on in the past, but the simple answer is that they are purifying others through their pain. Their pain is preventing others from enduring pain. Mm-hmm. And one tzaddik can prevent whole generations from enduring pain.
Wow.
Depending on what they go through and what kind of pain they have.
No, I wanted, when a person has passed away, until he is buried, you feel that person's soul. Is that because that soul is so worried as to which way it's going to be unrested?
The Svarim seem to say that there is that the body and soul are still very much connected. The soul, at the moment of death, the soul is pulled out of the body. That's why there's death. The soul is what gives us life. When the soul is pulled out of the body is now a corpse. There's,
and so the soul is suffering.
But the soul is still connected to the body. It's still hovering, whatever that means.
Right.
It's in a spiritual realm, but somehow it's hovering around the body. It does not go off to where it's supposed to go until after the burial. And that's why...
So it's not necessarily... It's suffering because it's being separated and that it can't do any more good deeds here.
That's
but,
right. That's
but
right.
At the same time, it's not suffering because it's going through a purification
no.
at that moment until it's buried.
Right. That's right. Okay. Now, that's all fine and good for those who will go through a purification process called Gehenna, and eventually they will exit from Gehenna, and the soul will go up to Gan Eden and wait, like everybody else, for Tchiyas HaMeisim, for the resurrection of the dead.
I want to clarify, is Gan Eden the same as the world of the souls?
Yeah.
Is that synonymous?
Yeah.
That's what
yeah. we're trying to but I'm not. I don't think it's the same as the world of the souls who are not yet born. I think it's two different places. There's the souls that have not yet been born, and the souls that have already gone through their lives and they're in.
Yeah,
I'm not sure. I lost the map. So I don't okay, so that's what happens in that scenario. Now, by the way, you should be aware of the fact that this place called Gan Eden, and this is often very comforting for people who have lost loved ones. It's a very comforting thought. But these souls who are up there in Gan Eden, they schmooze with each other. They're together. It's not like they're sitting there twiddling their thumbs. They're spiritual thumbs. They talk to each other. They relate to each other. There is some kind of camaraderie going on upstairs. We don't know exactly what it is. We don't know who you get to sit next to. But the Gemara talks about this. The Gemara talks about how somebody was about to die, and the angel who takes care of the souls made an announcement. You got to move over to make some room because this new soul is coming in. You got to make some room on the bench for it. You know, whatever that means, because they're not physical beings, they're spiritual. But there is interaction. There is interaction. And if you think about it, where are there more souls? Down here or upstairs? You imagine there's a lot more up there than down here. Right? So there's more going on. I don't know who you get to talk to, but imagine, you get upstairs, you get to talk to people from previous generations, your great 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 grandparents who are up there. Right? And the big Gedolim from previous generations, it must be a pretty fascinating place. So I'm not wishing it on anybody to go there prematurely, Chas v'Shalom, but it sometimes is comforting to realize that the souls are not just, just like in a box. There's some interaction, and there's something going on over there.
You're talking about level of the non-Jews.
So here's the question: what about those who are not going to get to go up to Gan Eden? What about those who are so evil, have been so terrible, that they are not going to get that special place because they are Rishayim. They're evil people. Real evil people. Not like borderline evil. But real evil. They knew better. They didn't care. They did terrible things. So what happens with them? So this is much more murky. What happens exactly? There's the concept of a person losing their chelik in Olam Haba, losing their place in the world to come, which is the worst possible punishment. To lose that ultimate reward. The Jews begin with a chelik in Olam Haba. We all, Kol Yisrael, Yesh Lahem chelik Olam Haba. We all begin with a place in the world to come. A Jew can, Chas V'Shalom, lose their place in the world to come. But you got to really work on it to lose it. It's not easy to lose. There are people who have lost it. But a non-Jew starts off without a portion in the world to come, and they have to earn it. That's ultimately the difference. We have it, but can lose it. They don't have it, but can earn it. That's the difference. So what happens to those who don't have a place in the world to come? or those who were so evil that their soul is not going to go up to Gan Eden. So here Gehenna takes on a whole new meaning. This is a different sort of Gehenna. This is not a Gehenna of a purification, or at least not the way we understand it with the typical concept of purification. Now it becomes a place where they're going to be for a very long time. And then the question is, what happens to them? The worst possible thing that could happen is obliteration, where they do not deserve to have any connection at all to Hashem, and therefore they're completely obliterated. Cease to exist. That's a scary concept. I don't like to think about that. And that, because what does that mean? Right. But that sort of thing is most likely reserved for the absolute worst of the worst. And we can put some names in there that we are aware of that deserve that kind of thing. But fine. That's that. But there are also evil people who don't deserve to lose every possible connection to Hashem, but they don't deserve any real reward. So those people are in Gehenna, but they still exist. They're not obliterated. They still exist, which means that Hashem is holding on to them because at some point they still have a role to play. What will that role be? The role will be something in the distant future. Some kind of role to play. It'll be a very, very minor role. Their connection to Hashem will be very tenuous. But they are not written off completely. But they remain in Gehenna. That's where the Egyptians went. That's where the Plishtim went. That's where all of the Bavel, the Babylonians, that's where they went. All those who are out to get the Jews, that's where they ended up. And that's what our parak here is going to talk about in the psukim that we have, which we have to start reading, otherwise we're not going to finish it before the end of the night. But we're going to read them through. That's what we're talking about over here. It's talking about the level of Gehenna where they remain until, I don't know when, till some point in the very, very distant future. And they're not totally obliterated, but they remain in this place called Gehenna.
But do you pray for their obliteration? Because it keeps coming back.
No, they're not coming back.
But does Hashem use them to put the soul back into?
No. They don't deserve anything like that. No, that's their own evil. That's their own evil. So that's the Gehenna which we're going to be talking about over here. We're not talking about, as it's not, I don't think it's a different place, but it's a different level. We're not talking about the level of Gehenna that unfortunately some souls go to for a short time. We're talking here about the level of Gehenna of going and staying there for a really long time, but until some distant point in the future when Hashem has some role for them to play.
People who suffer before death, could they also be in Gehenna and just kind of work higher to
Gehenna? You mean people that they didn't suffer
that they're suffering because they're getting out of
Gehenna, but rather,
they want to go to a higher level.
That's right. That is another reason why it could happen. Hashem could make a person suffer because Hashem wants them to get a better place in Gan Eden.
So the
way that we would understand that is that, as everybody understands, if a person does a mitzvah that is easy to do, the reward is not nearly as great as doing a mitzvah when it's difficult to do it. So if a person, we never hope for this, but if a person, God forbid, has to suffer, and through their suffering, they're able to do a mitzvah in some way or other, even if the mitzvah is smiling at somebody else. That's a mitzvah. Right? Making someone else feel good. Or making one bracha, whatever it is, but if they're able to, in their suffering, be able to perform a mitzvah, that mitzvah is going to give them incredible reward. And that will elevate their status in Olam Haba, well, in Gan Eden, and ultimately in Olam Haba, to a level they would not have otherwise been able to attain. So sometimes Hashem does it for that reason. That is true. That is another reason why. It could be a combination. Yeah?
Just before you move on, everyone goes to Gehenna?
Not necessarily. Mm-hmm. No. Like I said before, the best case scenario is...
Because he said even Zadikim could go to purify others.
Right. I meant there, the suffering in this world.
Yeah.
I didn't mean
Oh,
Ken.
Oh, you meant.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, no, Aesthetic will not
so
go
you
to.
You could, like, skip Ken.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, we hope people, everybody skips Ken. That's what we hope.
So that's what I'm saying. Like,
yeah.
Most, like, we hope that no one's really going, but you're saying cottage only for 11 months because.
Because even if they're there.
If, in case they go, what you
right,
mean,
right, they right. Probably. We all hope that none of us have to be in Ganem and none of our relatives have to be in Ganem. We all hope that. And it is possible. I mean, I don't know what the statistics
so
are.
It's a pretty low level that goes to Ganem.
Well, I don't know. I don't know.
No,
I
I'm saying, like, you don't assume that most people go there.
Well, I don't know what the statistics are. I don't know. I just don't know. I don't know how what the you know what the percentages are. But it is an attainable thing, not to go to Ganem.
No, okay,
yeah,
fine.
It is attainable. And but
if they go, it's like it doesn't have to be for so long. Like,
right.
Even, like, think that
right.
There,
right.
Like,
it could be for 2 days.
Okay.
You know, there's all you know. There's all kinds of levels. We don't you know. But someone who doesn't deserve it will not end up in Gehenna. Someone who doesn't deserve it may suffer in this world because that will help others, that will help himself, that will help the world, you know, whatever Hashem's cheshbonos are. Okay, so let's read. And if we have time, I'll share with you a Gemara about Nebuchadnezzar and Gehenna, which is based on a pasuk which we're going to be reading here. So, Yud Zayin 17. Vayhi b'shtei esrei shana was in the 12th year, b'chamisha asar l'chodesh, on the 15th of the month. Now the 15th of the month, it doesn't tell you which month because it's building on the first pasuk of this parak where it said the 12th month. So it's the 15th day of the 12th month. What day is that?
Purim.
Shushan Purim. Right. Oh. That's when this nevuah happens. Hayar d'var Hashem elai le'mor, the word of Hashem was to me saying. This of course was before the Purim story, but ultimately becomes Shushan Purim. Ben Adam, son of man, Nehei al Hamon Mitzrayim v'horidehu. You should lament on the multitudes of Egypt and bring him down. Osa uvenos goyim it, meaning the Egyptians and the other nations that were with it, Adirim that were powerful. El eretz tachtios to the lower land, as yar devor those who descend to the pit. So Rashi tells us all these references we're going to have of the lower lands and the pits going down, all of that is about Gehenna. That's what's meant over here. Mimina upt. Who do you think you're better than? Talking about Egypt. Who do you think you're better than? You think you're better than other nations? Redah, go down. V'hashkiva es arelim, and lie down with the other arelim. An arel means an uncircumcised person, but it is always used as a pejorative in Tanakh and in Chazal, and that's what it's meant with as over here, as a negative, as a put down. B'soch chalalei cherev yipolu, amongst those who were killed by the sword, they will fall. Cherev nitana, the sword has been given. Mashchu osa v'chol hamonel, it will drag it, meaning Egypt and all of its multitudes. Yedabru lo eile giborim mitok shaol es ozrav. They will speak to him, the strong ones from the pit, meaning from the grave, those who helped him. Yardu, they will say to Egypt, go down. Shachbu ha'arelim, lie with the arelim. Chalalei charev, those who were killed by the sword. Sham Ashur v'chol kehala. That's where Ashur is, meaning Assyria, and all of its multitudes. Sivyosav kibrosav, around its graves. Kulam chalalim anoflim becharav, all of them are corpses that have fallen by the sword. Asher nivnu kibroseha biyakesevor, that their graves have been put in the depths of the pit. Vahi kehalas vos kvurasa, and their multitudes were around their graves. Kulam chalalim anoflim becharav, all of them are corpses falling by the sword. Asher nosnu chitis beretz chayim, why are they in Gehenim? Because they have put fear in the land of life. What's the land of life? Eretz Yisrael. Because they dared put fear into the land of Israel, that is why they have gone down to Gehenna. These are those who fight with the Jewish people, who, as Rashi says, drag down the Torah, they end up in Gehenna. Sham Elam v'chol hamona, that's where Elam is, and all of its multitudes. Elam was another nation that started up with us during the first Beis HaMikdash. Sivivos kvurasa, around its graves. Kulam chalalim, all of them are corpses. Hanoflim bechev, that fall by the sword. Asher yardu areilim aleretz tachtios, that they go down with the areilim to the lower lands. Asher nasnu chitisam eretz chayim, because they put their fear in the land of life. Vayisu chilumasam, and they carry their shame as yardevar down with those who go down to the pit. Vesol chalalim nasnu mishkav la bechol amona. Amongst the corpses, they are given a place to rest with all of their multitudes. Simosav kvuroseha, around its grave. Kulam arelim chalecherav, all of them are arelim, killed by the sword. Ki itan chitisam eretz chayim, because they have given their fear in the land of life. Vayisuch limasam esyar devar, they raise their shame with those who go down to the pit. Besoch chalim nitan, amongst the corpses it has been given. You see, these words are very repetitious. Obviously, there's a reason for it. I do not know how to explain each time the phrases are repeated. Sham meshech tuval v'chol hamona. There is meshech and tuval and all of its multitudes, other nations that started up with us. Smiosab kvuroseha, around its graves. Kulam arelim v'chulei cherev, all of them are arelim. They are killed by the sword. Kinasnu chitisam be'eretz chayim, because they put their fear in the land of life. Now, this next pasuk is a little bit of a departure from what's been said until now. The reference has always been those who are killed by the sword. Now the pasuk says, "V'lo yishkivu es giborim noflim me'areilim." They will not lie with the strong ones, those who have fallen of the areilim. Asher yardu sha'ol bechlei milchamtam, that they went down to the pit with their utensils of war, meaning that they didn't use their utensils of war. They went down to the pit with their utensils of war. Vayitnu eschar vosam takas rasheihem, and their swords were placed under their heads. When they buried a warrior who did not die in battle, they would bury the sword under his head to say that he didn't use his sword. That's what they would do. So these people who are killed by the sword will not go down with those whose swords were put under their heads when they were buried. Vatihi avonosam alatzmosam, and their sins were on their bones. Ki chitis giborim be'eretz chayim, for the fear of the strong ones was in the land of life. Rashi explains this pasuk to mean that those who were killed by the sword, even the evil Egyptians and Plishtim and Ashur and all these enemies of ours, but if they were killed by the sword, then they did endure some suffering before they died. That suffering does mitigate in some small way the Gehenna that they have to experience.
It does
diminish it in some small way. But those who did not die by the sword, they died a peaceful death, their Gehenna is even worse than the other ones, because they didn't experience any suffering. And so therefore, they had nothing to diminish their pain that they're going to have in Gehenna, and therefore they're even lower than the ones who died by the sword.
So they're telling that the sword was behind your head or not on your head. That's describing the warriors
who
did the killing.
The warriors who did not die by the sword.
Who did not die by the sword had it under their head.
They put
so that's supposed to be a symbol for Hashem to be able to read who died.
No. That's the way the Goyim did it. They buried those who did not die by the sword. And you know, it's like the statues, and they have, you know, the statues of a man on a horse. You know how it works?
Yeah.
There's soldiers on a horse, and they put statues of soldiers on a horse. There's a rule for this. If all four legs are on the ground, that means that he died a natural death. If three legs are on the ground, one leg is up in the air, it means they were, I believe, wounded in battle, but did not die in battle. And if two legs are up in the air, it means that he died in battle. It's symbolic of how the warrior died. I also never realized it until I read about it. So this is the thing. This is a similar idea. When they would bury the warrior who did not die in battle, they would put the sword under their head. So here the pasuk is saying that type of person is going to get a worse Gehenna because they didn't suffer in their death. V'atav v'soch arelim, but you, meaning Egypt, amongst the arelim, tishavar, you will be broken, v'sishkav eschalecharev, and you will lie with those who were killed by the sword. Shama Edom, that's where Edom is. Milachecha v'chol nesieha, its kings and all of its princes, ashenidnu v'gvurasam eschalecharev, that they gave with their strength the corpses of the sword. Hema es arelim yishkavu, they will lie with the arelim, v'esgar devar, those who go down to the pit. Shama nesichei tzafon, there are the the leaders of the north, the northern nations that attacked Israel. Kulam, all of them. Vechod Sidoni, and all of Sidoni, another nation. Asher yardu es chalalim, that they went down with the corpses. Bechitisam migvurasam boshim, with their fear, with their strength, in shame. Vayishkivu arelim es chalai cherev, and they will lie with the arelim, with those who died by the sword. Vayisuch limasam es yardivar, they will lift their shame with those who go down to the pit. Osam yire faro, those people, Paro will see, when he goes down, he will see all these people, and this is fascinating. V'nicham al kol hamono, and he will be consoled for all of his multitudes. There's misery loves company. Even in Gehenna, misery loves company. This is what I'm trying to say, that even after death, the souls have something to do with each other. There is some consolation when the Paro goes down to Gehenna and sees everybody else down there. Oh, okay, it's not only me. There is some consolation. Chalalei cherev, those who died by the sword. Paro v'chol chelo, Paro and all of his army, all of his soldiers. Neum Hashem Elokim, says Hashem God. Now here's a fascinating pasuk. Kinasati eschitisi be'eretz chayim, because I have put my fear, says Hashem, in the land of life. And that's the type of fear that's supposed to be in the land of life in Eretz Yisrael, is my fear, the fear of God. I have placed my fear in the land of life, and I have caused to lie down amongst the arelim, those who died by the sword. Paro v'chol hamono, Paro and all of his multitudes, Neum Hashem Elokim, says Hashem God. In other words, when Hashem's fear is in the land of life, that is when all of these enemies are forced down into Gehenna. That is the trade-off. But Eretz Yisrael is a land that is going to have fear in it. There's always going to be fear in Israel. Israel is a place that is meant to be a place of fear.
Is it a challenge of faith?
No. The fear is meant to be the fear of God.
Awesome.
That's what it's supposed to be. When there is no fear of God, Chas v'Shalom, in Israel, then there has to be fear of other nations. There's always chitis ve'eretz chayim. There's always fear in the land of Israel. If we are in Eretz Israel and we fear God, then Hashem says, then there's no need for any other fears. Then the fear has been fulfilled, and there's no need for other fears. And Hashem removes all of the other nations. But if, God forbid, there's no fear of God in Israel, then there has to be fear of other nations. Then there has to be fear of terrorism, etc., etc. All that is a replacement for the fear that ought to be there, which is the fear of Hashem Himself.
Isn't it Jewish thought that you can have fear of Hashem even if you knew nothing about the Torah or being anything related to you other than you're born and
the Torah passport? The Mishnah says in Pirkei Avos, "Ein bor yirechet," that an ignoramus cannot fear sin. Because if you don't know what to do and what not to do, how can you fear sin? Now, you're asking, can you fear God? You could have some idea of God, but you can't really know what to do unless you're educated. And that's why it's very important to educate every Jew. But of course, as we know, it's not held against someone who didn't have an opportunity to learn. Yeah, okay, no, that's a good question. That's a good question. She asked, what about kares? Kares is a punishment in the Torah for various sins. Kares means to be cut off from the Jewish people. And the question is, what exactly is it? What does it mean? It does not seem to be that kares is the same thing as losing a place, a person's portion in the land, in the world to come. It does not seem to be that it's the same thing. It seems to be that it's pretty bad, but it doesn't seem to be like that. So what it is, a spiritual thing. There is a physical manifestation of it as well, but the spiritual aspect of kares, I certainly don't understand it fully. It seems to be some aspect in the world to come where the person is not able to be completely part of the Jewish people, and that's apparently something that is hurtful. So it definitely diminishes what the person's olam haba is. But it does not seem that it's the same thing as losing one's chilek in olam haba, which is a totally...
And what would that person be in that intermediate...
I don't know. I don't know where it fits in. That's a good question. I don't know. I don't know where it fits in. The Gemara says that when Nebuchadnezzar died, Nebuchadnezzar was a terrible rasha. As you know, he destroyed the first Beis HaMikdash. Nebuchadnezzar was also a very, very powerful king. He ruled over the entire known world. He was Malach B'Kippa. Kippa meaning Kippa. He ruled over the dome of the world, as the Gemara says. He ruled over the entire known world. And he was not a very benevolent conqueror. He would conquer other nations, and he would put the other nations through a great deal of suffering, especially their leadership. And the Gemara describes it. Everybody feared Nebuchadnezzar. At one point in his life, the Gemara tells us that Nebuchadnezzar actually rode on a lion with a snake tied around the lion's neck as reins. Whatever that means. I'm saying that this is Nebuchadnezzar was a powerful, powerful man who controlled all kinds of things, and he was a very, very fearful person. Nobody liked being in his presence. It was very scary. When he died, he, of course, went straight down to Gehenna. As he was entering Gehenna, the Gemara says, there was a tumult in Gehenna. Because Nebuchadnezzar was entering Gehenna. And everybody was afraid. Perhaps he's come to rule over us in Gehenna. It's unbelievable. You see that there's interaction. There's things going on. It's not right. Those who are in Gehenna, who were suffering, were afraid of even greater suffering and being subjected to the Nebuchadnezzar even in Gehenna. And the Gemara says this pasuk Yud Tes 19. Even though when we read it referring to Paro and Mitzrayim, the Gemara uses this pasuk to refer to Nebuchadnezzar, and so this pasuk is talking to him. And the pasuk is Miminaat. Who do you think you're better than? Rida, go down. V'hashkivas Arilim, and lie with the Arilim. You're no better than they are. You're going to be subjected to the same Gehenna they're subjected to, and you will not lord over anybody in Gehenna. You will simply be another person in Gehenna like everybody else, no better than anyone else. But the reason why this is said is because it seems that people in Gehenna were afraid they were going to be subjected to him, and it seems that he himself thought that he would be given some degree of power even in the suffering of Gehenna. Not that he wouldn't suffer, but that he would have some sort of kingdom in Gehenna itself. And the pasuk is saying, no. That's over and done with. You lost that. That was this world, and now you're in Gehenna like everybody else. That's what the Gemara says about this particular pasuk. It's a fascinating thing. We don't really understand these concepts. The purpose here is to just give us a sense of what's going on. Of course, we can't answer every question. And we know that none of us, God forbid, are subjected to this sort of Gehenna that's being discussed over here. We hope that we're not subjected to any Gehenna at all. We certainly hope that. But this is conceptually what Gehenna is. Which Gemara? It's actually a Gemara in Masechet Shabbos. Yeah, but it has nothing to do with Hilchos Shabbos. Shabbos has a lot of very interesting Agadic Gemaras, because the nature of Gemara is Gemaras go into tangents, and if one thing relates to another, it will talk about it. So even if it has nothing directly to do with Shabbos, it will discuss.
So the other thing too is when you hear these very, very evil single individuals, and they have lived out a life as from World War II here, and it sounds like they lived out their life, nobody even bothered them, you know, they found a new life in America or wherever. But they will have the worst of punishment.
That's correct.
Because this is like the balance.
That's correct. That's correct. It's 9 o'clock. So I don't want to take too much time on this, but let's just use what you said as an example. You know, when the Israeli government was able to get their hands on Eichmann, Yimach Shemo, and they executed him, which was the right thing to do. It is the right thing to try to bring justice to those evil people, and to execute them. That is the right thing to do. If we can, we can't always do it. Can't get our hands on them. But that would be the right thing to do. When they did it, that was the right thing to do. However, it means that although he was and is a terrible person, terrible, most terrible, terrible, but he did endure some slight degree of suffering in this world that some of his colleagues managed to avoid. So the colleagues who avoided it are actually worse off.
Oh.
Because they didn't suffer at all. Now that's assuming they were both equally bad in the first place. He may have been much worse than everybody else in the first place, which means that that suffering is not really going to change much. But I'm saying if you have two people who are exactly the same degree of evil, and one manages to avoid the executioner's noose, and the other one gets caught, the one who gets caught is going to be slightly better off in Gehenna. This is assuming they're not obliterated. Mm-hmm. With a man like that, he may just have ceased to exist. I mean, you know, there's no way for us to know now. We'll find out.